I guess we'll get started. I want to thank you all for coming. I spent a good bit of time flaming Aaron Falk for scheduling these different working groups all together, opposite one another, especially given that we had so much time in the schedule. So there's a grand old party going on over in Control Frameworks, some interesting issues being discussed, and I may actually be floating in and out during the meeting, but I wanted to start out here and then hand it over to Vic Thomas, the experimenter workflow services working group engineer from GPO, to take it from there. So we have a couple of issues we want to discuss, and a couple of speakers who are going to do some presentations getting at some of those issues. I think it's always important to put in front of us the questions that we're trying to answer. I think a lot of the emphasis right now in design of Genie is on control framework and trying to figure out how we're going to get all of the different pieces of Genie sort of stitched together and slice instantiation. And what we're trying to do in workflow and services is deliver on the real mission of Genie, which is to make this facility easy for researchers to use to do real research and meet their objectives. So everything that has to do with figuring out what users really need and managing the planning, scheduling, running, debugging, analyzing, and so on. And there are a number of important issues in all of that. One of the things that is in front of us right now that we're supposed to actually deliver to GPO is a use case document that takes a sort of a path through all the different components of experiment workflow so that we can then discuss each of those problems and divide and conquer and discuss each of those issues independently. And Vic has done a lot of work on that document. He's going to talk a little bit about that document because that's something we need to wrap up. And then we have three speakers on different aspects of some of the issues that are before us. Ilya Baldin, who's going to, not necessarily in this order, I think Vic is the custodian of the agenda here. Ilya Baldin is going to talk about a toolkit for actually configuring components, configuring different pieces of software together to make a complete experiment in the context of a particular class of experiments, for cross-layer experiments on network substrate. Paul Barford is here. He's going to talk about measurement and instrumentation and the work they're doing on that over at Wisconsin. And Denise Gurkhan is here to talk about their work on data plane measurements and substrate components, whose purpose is to deliver a variety of measurements from optical substrate. And then we'll talk a little bit about futures. And so all of these, let me just, all of these go to sort of the core challenges that we really face, the focus areas for this working group, really. We've divided them into a couple of categories, and of course, there are no bright lines between all these categories. But these are sort of three areas where we really need to come to some clear understanding within the working group and the interested participants, and with the GPO and other participants in Genie about what sorts of facilities we really need to offer here. So these three focus areas. One of them, which I'll talk a little bit about, but which we're not going to have the other speakers necessarily address, is this question of slice control. That is, what is the experimenter control and the experimenter tools that allow experimenters to control and orchestrate their experiments and their slices? And so I have a few things to say about that. There's been some traffic on the mailing list about this question of a slice controller and how that relates to experiment controller. And in a previous the GEC3 working group meeting, Jeannie Albrecht talked about GUSH, which is an experiment workflow engine. So that's prompted some of this discussion. I see Ilya's talk as addressing this building blocks question. We have to ask the question, you know, people aren't going to program their slivers from the ground up when they launch an experiment within a slice. If they have to do that, then Genie is going to be very difficult for experimenters to use. What we really want is to allow people to draw from a collection of off-the-shelf components, Components is the wrong word since we're using that for substrate, but off-the-shelf code elements and deliver those to their slices, their slivers and slices. And one aspect of that is the question of how do we actually deliver the code to all the slivers of a slice? And John Hartman spoke about that with some of his work on Raven at the last working group meeting. And what Ilya is addressing is this question of, you know, what are the toolkits and repositories of code elements that we might combine into a slice? And how do we think about the problem of sliver programming itself as a separate problem, not delivering the code to the slivers, but selecting what code is going to run in a sliver and dealing with all the configuration management and so on? What kinds of toolkits can we provide that will be a powerful basis for experimenters to build experiments and run them in Genie easily? And so the one that we're focusing on with two of the talks today is this notion of information plane. We need to be able to, I think it was said very well, I think Chip said it today, to be able to gather all the information during an experiment, to gather all the information that would be necessary to actually reproduce that experiment, and to also gather data from it that we can analyze offline to learn as much as we can from each experiment. So the question about, you know, what are the instrumentation engines? How do we configure them in a slice? How do we select them? Are they allocatable components, just like other substrate components? Are they built into substrate components according to some specification? How do we tell them what information we want? Are they adaptive in some sense? They can deliver more information or less information. How do we allocate the network resources and storage resources that we need in order to deliver that data to where it's supposed to go, to store it, et cetera? And then how are these elements archived and indexed for later querying and search and analysis and so on? All of these questions are on the table. And I think that a lot of the questions that we're dealing with here that are enumerated on the slide and that are the focus of this group are really going to come into play once we have the basic sorts of capabilities moving in Genie, probably in later spirals. But we really need to try to get as much out on the table and as much a meeting of the minds around these issues as we can before then. Okay, so let me just start by just saying a little bit about the usage narratives. So as I said, Vic has prepared a document, and we've iterated over that a little bit, and it's been posted to the working group mailing list. We haven't gotten so many comments back on it. Have we? Are you gonna talk about feedback? Okay, good. But the basic issue is that we need, you know, some kind of a taxonomy of all the tools so that we can divide and conquer, and we need to be able to give narratives of how researchers might actually use Genie that visit each of those elements, so that we can really understand how they fit together and what the case is, you know, which ones are really necessary for, to really have a workable Genie facility. And so we really need to address all aspects of the experiment lifecycle, from planning an experiment all the way through to analyzing the data. The goal really is to, be able to give some kind of a narrative that will help people draw a picture in their minds of what all the pieces are for Genie and what all the researcher-facing components are. And there may be, so then that will allow us to sort of figure out where to focus our attention focus on particular areas where we need to flesh out the design in more detail. So I think, there are a number of sort of use narratives that we could develop further that came up in the last GEC and some of the talks, and I just wrote a few of them down. Interesting kinds of experiments that someone might do in Genie, and I think this is just by way of sort of prodding a discussion on what are the most useful usage narratives that we can put forward if we build on this usage document in order to provide good examples of how Genie might be used and that actually expose some of the problems that we face in terms of services and experiment workflow. And these also, by the way, meet a need that that Chip also mentioned, this question of, you know, how do we really, what are really the most compelling use cases that we want to put forward to help demonstrate the value of Genie and the potential value of Genie to a larger community. So here are three that just seem to me to be to be useful and interesting, but of course, your example here is bullet number 4. So one is this question of how do we evaluate a virtual router appliance? If we have different approaches for building virtualizable routers or for programming routers to behave in certain ways, how do we do experiments that will evaluate the effectiveness of fairly small sorts of sets of changes and code running on a small set of routers in order to be able to evaluate that element in isolation. So Kevin Fall gave a talk at the last GEC about a programmable router structure that they're working on over there in Intel Research. And that was an interesting talk. And the idea that showed a lot of promise as a foundation for being able to sliver programmable routers and incorporate them into more complex Genie experiments. So we do need to sort of understand what the notion is of a sliver on a programmable router, but we also need to evaluate these designs. So this, I think, is one idea of a very simple kind of experiment that would be very useful and interesting, expose some of the problems. How do we package canned traffic loads? How do we specify that canned traffic loads are to be used in an experiment? And how do we allocate the resource that's necessary in order to play a canned load at some set of components that are instantiated into an experiment? I probably should have said at the beginning, this feels a little strange because we got this working group, right? It's supposed to be a discussion, and here I am standing at this podium with a microphone. Please. Yeah.
So, this meeting, I missed the last GEC, is actually extremely reminiscent of the first meeting that I went to for Planet Lab, which was at SIGCOM 2003 or something like that. And
I believe I was there. Yeah.
As opposed to, Genie was designed to do all these things, and here are the use cases. No, it's going to be just the opposite. This is what Genie is going to be used for. So I'm slightly concerned, maybe, or I guess I'm just wondering, I think I am concerned, that if we're actually going to be defining sort of the experimental agenda for Genie, we need to shake people up a little bit and say,
so
what are the set of experiments that we're going to actually, and it can be defined at a high level, but what are the set of experiments we're actually going to be addressing?
So I do have one thing that I want to say to that. I mean, I share your concern. I think everybody who's involved in this project shares the concern that, we really need to, there's a lot of work to do to really define what's actually feasible as an experiment to run on Genie, and that really makes the compelling case that we all think we can make for why this thing is useful. But that is, and I want to say first that there's a lot of other power behind that set of questions. Chip mentioned some documents that have been generated by not just people involved with Genie, but also the NetSE Council, and Scott Shanker and others who have been involved with Genie. This is right. So there's a whole other set of people who are trying to put that forward. And this is, I flipped over to this slide because I stole a few quotes from one of a, from an earlier review panel that said, okay, well, you know, was trying to define what are the areas that are really fertile ground for research in Genie. And I agree with you that the use cases we put forward here, that this if we put forward a document that says Genie usage narratives, you know, that's going to be the first place to go where somebody says, well, gee, what is this thing for? It might be start here, you know. And so it would behoove us to develop usage examples that are based on these sort of really compelling, best foot forward, big research kinds of stories. And so, you know, extreme manageability and security. But this one here, this, you know, what's a sliver on a programmable router and, you know, playing canned traffic loads at a virtual router appliance, that's not something that we're going to put forward as a big picture research agenda for Genie. That's something that we're going to put forward as an experiment that we can really wrap our heads around and understand, but that has to visit some of the experiment workflow components, elements that we are going to need to put together in order to really make this thing fly. And if I could just say one other thing on the point about that sort of divergence of interest, I think it's really should be the same set of people who are interested in the plumbing and how it's going to be used. And I think by and large it is, except there are issues that are being addressed and that are on the table now that are very important that are under discussion and control framework. And for reasons that are completely inexplicable to me, these working group meetings were scheduled in conflict, which is a terrible mistake that I hope will never be repeated again. And it wasn't from me that it came. And I think that would help to sort of resolve some of this question. And I hope that the people at GPO know that I believe that. Well, that's true. Yeah, I don't want to drag us into a rat hole, and there's a hand up back there, and I have the microphone, so we could have done the working groups in three sessions instead of two. There was enough time in the schedule for it, and we would have removed a significant chunk of conflict. And there's no way to do it perfectly, but I think this is really a mistake because we really do need the whole community involved in this in some of these questions at this stage. I'm sorry. You, that's a good question. I think that there's going to be a process of this unfolding. The question of Chip posed this question. I think it's a question nobody knows the answer to. I certainly don't have a position on that. I think that we should strive for the most unified suite of infrastructure that we can in terms of the user. What the user does to actually program it and use it. Obviously, we want the highest level of diversity as we can get in the substrate, but we want the maximum level of unity in terms of our ability to write, design experiments and develop code that pulls all those pieces together and stitches them together. How long it takes to achieve that or how far we can go, I really don't know. I hope that we do have some convergence, but I think it's going to take a long time to do that. Henry, do you want to?
Thank you. to you.
We're going to do the Phil Donahue thing here.
I think I'm done.
You're done? Jim.
All right, so I think you hit it on the nail on the head in the sense that we don't necessarily have the right set of people here that may actually end up being the users of it. I mean, I think some of us, and we have a fine project where I could define what we're actually interested in. I was actually at some supercomputing group meetings. Those people scare me because they're already thinking of ways to use all the bandwidth, okay? But what came out of that was that they have a completely different set of requirements for the network, things that will help them make their experiments run quickly. And so one of the things that might be worthwhile is saying, well, who do you expect the biggest user group to be? And then sort of try to tailor the software to help them first. And that may be a little bit of a hard question to answer, but it might be worthwhile if you try to get the biggest bang for your buck, sort of. So.
Novel idea. Know your customer.
I think these questions, when we start talking about how to control experiments and what is our typical user, those are valid. I actually think it's entirely too early to talk about what experiments are going to run, because the experiments that run completely depend on the underlying infrastructure, which we still don't really have a solid idea of what that is going to be. So how can we answer what the experiments are going to be before we actually know what the available resources are going to
be? So that's the let 1,000 customers bloom.
Yeah, but these questions, like what control should we expose and what are our typical users, those are totally valid because that's going to be independent of the underlying control framework. The questions of what experiments can we specifically run, that depends on the control framework. So I think we're getting ahead of ourselves when we start trying to ask what experiments should run, and we should instead be asking what do the users actually need to run these experiments.
Yeah, so I think this is a great point. And again, I just want to enforce this distinction between trying to actually plan what experiments, what our genie is really going to be used for, versus trying to come up with narratives that allow us to sort of test and develop our thinking about what are all the pieces that we need to have in place in order to allow those experiments to occur. I think your point, Jeannie, really is that those things have to go forward hand in hand, and the testbed is going to, the suite of infrastructure that is Jeannie is going to evolve over time in the same way that Planet Lab has. But we need to get that process bootstrapped and started somehow, and thinking about some simple usage narrative seems a reasonable way to do it, and GPO has asked us to do that, and they've provided us with Vic, who's doing heavy lifting on on that document. So it's really a question of, what are good cases to sort of put forward and that will help us kind of guide some of these questions. If we propose a certain sort of thing that we think is really necessary in Genie, in the control framework, and GPO, NSF, would you please give us money to fund this? It would be reasonable for them to ask, well, what do you envision that this thing might be used for? And so it is important to sort of do them both at the same time. As interested as we all are in the plumbing, right? It is important. So why don't we go ahead? I've actually already used up all my time, which is fine. We have a little bit of extra slack in the schedule for exactly this sort of thing. So why don't we just take a couple minutes? And I noticed, Jeannie, your name is at the bottom of the slide. I think actually that I made this slide while listening to you talk at the last GEC and tried to. Oh, this might actually be your slide that I stole. Yeah, and again, right, so Jeannie's work with Gush is, of course, I think might be the best example that we have right now of an experiment controller. Works with Planet Lab, has worked on Orca. So it is, independent of control frameworks, and it, primarily deals with interaction of an experimenter with what's inside of their slice, but also as part of parsing a declarative, feel free to jump in here, Jeannie, if I'm garbling anything, but it parses a declarative representation of the experiment and the workflow, what pieces have to be stood up where, and it goes out and interacts through the control plane to get those resources and then stand up the experiment on it. So it's a really good basis for discussion about this notion of what we've recently called a slice controller. There's been some discussion on the list about you know, what all these experiment control tools that we're talking about, how do they reflect into the control plane? That is, what does the control, you know, the people over in that other room, control framework, what do they think or know about experiment control tools, right? All the stuff that comes out of this working group or that's under discussion in this working group is going to be built on top of whatever comes out of that working group. So they, you know, they have the same sort of question. And the issue is, can the, you know, what is the thing that the rest of the control framework talks to in order to provide notifications back to an experimenter or to, you know, changes in resource status or, you know, where does the instrumentation go? How do these get processed? I think that's an important question, and I think we've sort of converged based on the discussion last time and on discussions on the working group and some of the work that the Spiral One projects are doing toward an idea that there should be associated with each experiment and an actor, a server that has an endpoint that the control other control plane actors can talk to that, that actually is in charge of managing the experiment. So Gush is sort of an example of that. But we there is this question of whether the thing that controls the experiment is the same as the thing that controls the slice that the is reflected into the rest of the control framework. And so that issue is on the table. I think you know, the discussion kind of died down on the working group. I know that this is being discussed in GPO. You know, how do they reflect this in their documents about Genie? This is something that goes into control framework requirements, you know, for this notion of a slice controller. And then how much does the experiment control tools need to hook into the control framework? If anybody has any thoughts on any of these, on the answers to any of these questions, we could certainly have a discussion about it. But you know, how much control should be exposed? What are the right formalisms for specifying an experiment? And what is the API between the experiment controllers and the underlying control frameworks? And what does the experiment controllers or experiment control tools or slice controller, whatever you want to call it, what does it say to a clearinghouse? Yes, Paul. So, why don't you take the microphone?
Just a sort of a meta thought on that encompasses a number of these issues, which is that in my experience with test beds and experiments in test beds, the most important thing is to make getting up to speed on a particular experiment quick, easy. And the best way to do that is to have, let's say, pre-configured experiments that are well documented, that are easy to change, and that's the way you bootstrap any one of these experimental test beds. So that's, you know, about how do I specify an experiment? Yes, make it easy for somebody to do it from scratch, but more importantly, if you can give them a template that's already been used, already been well documented, includes things like what data sets were collected, how they were analyzed, and you can imagine other information, I think that that is one of the most critical aspects of anything that has to do with this sort of these sorts of general topics. Not that I know of.
Has Emulab succeeded in that?
Not that I know of. So, but I mean, I think that those are both responses that speak to our community. It isn't that people haven't also pointed this out, right? I mean, this goes back to the Looking Over the Fences report. We're not a community that appreciates repeatability in experiments, right? So, I mean, if we did, then I think we would have a different approach to some of these questions.
We would like to become that. Right. Yeah. So I threw this slide in. This is actually a slide from a research presentation, just to sort of give a peek at something that we'd like to be able to achieve within Genie. And research is associated with the Orca control framework as part of this Automat project that uses Orca. We're doing some work on automated configuration of experiments based on some high-level objective. And we're mostly working with very simple sort of benchmarking contexts. But if we've got all this programmatically accessible infrastructure and programmatically instantiatable experiments and libraries of things, wouldn't it be great if you could just write a program that goes and gets the resources and instantiates your experiment? And we all know we want to be able to do that, and that's what Gush does and so on. But once you have that, can you actually close the loop and have it figure out what experiment to run and then just go and do that whenever the resources are available? And when it's done or when more resources become available, go and figure out what the next experiment is and do that. There's a lot of sort of statistical stuff and machine learning that comes in and trying to do this, and obviously it's very context dependent. But that's if we're trying to think 10 or 15 years out, as Dave Clark was talking about, that's the kind of thing that we might like to be able to think about. And it's one reason why I think it's important to define a notion of a programmatic entity that operates autonomously on behalf of an experimenter that's programmable. And even if most experiments actually use something that's off the shelf or interact with one that's running within a website and has a manual kind of interface to sort of stand up something, or works with declarative scripts, that we have at the control framework level something that is an entity that the other control framework components can interact with that actually determines how the experiment is set up and run. I don't know if this sort of idea has actually been discussed within the Genie community up until now. It seemed like a reasonable time to sort of put it forward. Whether this falls in the in the domain of experiment control tools or experiment controllers, I really don't know. Yeah. Well, what this thing would be. Essentially, what you have is the controller, which is getting information from the control framework about what resources are available, or maybe it's putting out standing requests for resources and they're coming in, and then it's deciding based on some kind of a high-level user goal what experiments to run. It's running the experiments, collecting all the data, and actually looking at the data as a way to help shape its choices about what experiment to run next. So if you're trying to map out some kind of a surface, a function by running experiments and observing it for some points, you can find the parts that are interesting and focus more experiments on those, depending on the results that come back. And this is actually a very useful thing for automated benchmarking, and it's part of what we're trying to do in the Orca project. And I think it would be good if we at least had a platform for doing these kinds of programmable experiments in Genie, and that's one reason why I've tried to push this idea of a slice controller. But nevertheless, I think, Paul, I think... the best way to actually deliver on this objective of making it possible for people to cut and paste experiments, if I could put it that way, is to really work with declarative representations. And I think Gush has a good declarative representation that's kind of interesting. Just component blocks describing the components and how they interact and so on. With some hooks for monitoring and adaptation. And Orbit actually has a pretty good declarative representation that's based on Ruby. What we've done in Orca Scirocco is to have programmatic controller APIs and then a very simple sort of web interface that allows you to interact with them. But being able to sort of glue these different models together, a programmatic one that interprets declarative representations and so on, is really, I think, where we want to go. Any other comments on any of that? So these are some things that we might like to have in a slice controller. And of course, we can make this thing sort of arbitrarily complex. Incremental resource allocation. Can my experiment grow in the middle? Is that an important thing for the resources associated with an experiment to change in the middle? Does anyone know? Okay, so somebody's nodding their head yes. So that's... we need some sort of support for monitoring in order to determine if the experiment has gone off the rails somehow. And that, again, might be defined by the experiment and what it sort of expects to see. We need some kind of callbacks that enable notifications to be delivered and code to run that's triggered in response to some kind of unusual conditions, and Gush has some support for that. But that, to me, seems like a very important thing to have in here. And then I guess we probably want to move on and start talking about substrate level measures, since we have a lot of things to discuss there. The substrate level measures, where do we go? Where do they go when we configure instrumentation? Where does the data go? Does it go into a file and is analyzed offline that's outside of the scope of Genie? Or can it be fed back in some way to some programmatic entity that can be then figure out what the next experiment is, as in the manner that I sort of hinted at there? So the question of how we kind of close the loop and how we control where the instrumentation data goes, how do we save it and archive it in order to be able to push a button and reproduce the same experiment later is an important set of questions. So Jim, I think, talked about EduLab last time, and we got at some of the instrumentation questions. I have a slide or two here, but maybe I probably should just step down and be quiet and sort of move on with the rest of the program. Maybe, Vic, do you want to talk about the usage? You're next, right? We'll talk about usage narratives. And then we'll get into the instrumentation stuff later. Screwed it in, I guess. Yeah. Whoever does that. Excuse us, we just got to do the handoff here.
Okay. Great. Thanks. So you, yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So we talked about. Jeff talked about use cases, and what I'm going to talk about is this document that's out for review. And what I'm hoping to do is provide a bit of a teaser that'll get you to read the document and send comments or participate in the review of this document that's scheduled for 2 weeks from Friday. So this document is essentially tells us to give you some context on the document. This working group is responsible for has signed up for 4 deliverables. This in spiral 1. The first is a life cycle of a Genie experiment, so it's a story about, so you start how an experiment in Genie would progress right from experiment conception all the way to design, deployment, collect instrumentation, to finally the archival of the experiment. So that's the document that's ready for review, and that's what I'll be talking about. We have another document on which is cataloging experimental tools and services that will be available at the end of Spiral 1. So different control frameworks are building different tools. So this is a catalog of what's available. And that's in the works and should be ready soon. And the other two documents we are responsible for is a technical requirements for workflow services and a measurement system architecture. Neither of these documents have been started yet. Paul will later on today talk a little bit about a measurement architecture for Genie and also a measurement workshop that he is planning on having in a month or so. So this document is available online and a review is scheduled for April 17th. If for any reason you cannot make the review, I'd appreciate your sending your comments to the working group mailing list. so everybody can see your comments, and we can discuss them there. But if you can make this review, it would be greatly appreciated. So the purpose of this document is to identify tools and services to support experimentation. So the question came up earlier about these use cases and the danger of them being used to say, this is what Genie will be used for. Really, the purpose here is to run through. In system design, you often have use cases, so you run through the use cases, make sure that your system can support these. Not only make sure your system can support that those use cases, but also understand the interactions between different components of the system. So that's the purpose of this doing use cases. And this document has a rather extensive use case. I'll tell you a little more about it that hopefully captures as a large number of these interactions between various components of the architecture. This is not the only use case we'll be doing. This is meant to be a first fairly comprehensive use case. It doesn't go into a lot of details on how things work within the system. It's meant to, from an experimental point of view, what does Genie look like? So that's the reason. So it's really a fictional narrative of an experiment that starts at a university and eventually the technology transitions to product. So the background for this use case is there are increasing numbers of people accessing the internet using mobile devices that connect through the cellular network infrastructure. So people using smartphones and things like that. So a professor and his grad student, they are working on a protocol suite that where the routing schemes are centered around cellular base station locations. They're looking at networking protocols that incorporate knowledge held by cellular signaling protocols. So the cellular signaling protocols exchange information about, for example, handoffs and things like that, so you know where the user is going to be next. Can these protocols take advantage of this information? And then things like fast proxy deployment based on predictions of where the user would be. So that's the premise here. I don't know if this may or may not be a real research challenge, but this is a driving example. So these researchers decide to use Genie to emulate the network, and so what they do in the scenario is they go to Genie, and Genie has a search engine. They search to see if anybody has done experiments with cellular technology in Genie. So that goes to the point that Paul raised earlier about having an archive of experiments that people can take and reuse and modify. So it turns out they actually find an experiment and a formal specification of this experiment, and they modify this to actually set up their experiment inside Genie. It has four base stations. These base stations are connected by a wide network with software routers and 100 nodes to simulate mobile nodes. So this is kind of what it looks like. There are the four base stations. So the four base stations are these hexagonal nodes connected by software routers, and then the mobile nodes are circles. And since they're simulating a wireless network, the way they do this here is every mobile node they're not using wireless nodes; they're using a wired node with connectivity to all the base stations. But they are simulating a wireless link. So essentially, using RF propagation models, deciding which base station would be the closest and the one they should connect to. Yep.
Why aren't we using neural networks? Why aren't we running code on real cell phones?
Right. So I'll get to that. That's the next step in the scenario. The reason you might not want to start off that way is, well, you have to. True. If you had something like Million Node Genie, one could conceivably do that. This was done mostly to. That's something that could grow into, and in fact, in this scenario, it does grow into something like that, where you have real users.
Sure.
Yep. Exactly.
like yeah. on a cell phone to debug code. Because it's easier to debug code than have full access to
the So they use a provisioning tool to install their software, the base station software, the mobile node software, and the router software. And then they so something like Raven, perhaps, and then they use something like Gush to run and control the experiment. The document, of course, has a lot more detail and just giving you the highlights. And then the instrumentation measurement tools to understand performance of the protocol suite. So in this, one of the things you'll find in this narrative, if you read the document, is all the changes they make to the experiment is through changes of an experiment specification language. So initially, they specify in the experiment specification language, they want, say, four highly capable machines for base stations and a certain kind of machines for the mobile nodes. Later on, they refine this experiment specification to get certain very specific kinds of resources. So it's all based on trying to operate at a higher level, not going to some kind of a list and saying, I want this resource, this resource, this resource. You specify what kind of resource you want, and hopefully some tool will get you the resource you need. So they run this experiment. Things seem to run well, and then they notice that there are periods when there are a lot of dropped packets, and then they go to the measurement tools, to find out what is wrong, and they find out that the routers at certain times are not able to keep up with packet processing. So they decide, well, maybe we need to switch to FPGA-based routers. So they go to the experiment specification language and change the requirements for the router nodes to be FPGA hardware routers, essentially. And this is the new topology. The only difference from what we saw earlier is now you have FPGA-based routers, nothing interesting. So in the experiment goes well. They decide to grow it. There was a question about, is there a need to grow experiments without having to stop them? In this scenario, they actually grow the experiment, add new nodes without actually stopping it. They could have done the same thing, I guess, by stopping it. And then they find out that things work out really well. Their protocol suite does indeed give better quality of service to mobile users, accessing the internet through the cellular network than the internet protocol suite, published their results in a conference. And then at the conference, they run into a researcher from a cellular network provider and who decides, well, it might be interesting to actually try this on a real system with real users. And so they put in the necessary agreements. This company decides that they would essentially provide a Genie aggregate consisting of two real base stations, cellular base stations. But this aggregate is only visible to researchers at this university. And so these real base stations are connected to the emulated base stations. So now you have a scenario where you have some nodes that are emulating real nodes, and then also real nodes in the setup. The real base stations run the experimental protocol suite in parallel with the production suite, which is the regular service that they sell. They have a gateway to enable connections to the internet. And then this is where they actually take some smartphones and put this new protocol suite in it. And to Justin's point, they could have done this from the very start. So this is what it looks like now. So you have the same setup, the emulated network, and then you have now connections to real cellular base stations with real users. So this is kind of what it looks like. So you have both a real and an emulated component. And then the service, initially they did give these modified smartphones to the colleagues of this researcher. And everybody loves this service. So this company decides to turn this into a premium service, and then it's essentially transitions to a product offered by this company, and the scenario ends with as far as the academic researchers are concerned, in addition to collecting, royalties, or they also, from a Gini point of view, archive this experiment, talks about experiment archival, so others can find this experiment, modify it, and grow it later, or even reproduce the experiment. So that's essentially what this scenario is. It's not the it's not the most exciting of stories, but hopefully I've interested you enough to go read it and comment on it. Yep, Justin. Right, the Gini part. They can reproduce the Gini part. What's inside Gini? Yeah. So the document goes beyond the scenario. Now that we have the scenario, it goes on to outline the phases in the life cycle. So based on the scenario, what are the kinds of things, what's the workflow that these experimenters went through, and can we do a taxonomy of tools that are needed to support this workflow? And at a very high level, you have the experimental registration. This is the identity validation and so on, the planning, deployment, execution, and sunsetting. And the document further breaks each of these phases into greater detail. I described some of this at the last GEC. The second part of the document is meant to be a taxonomy of tools. And the Spiral 1 capabilities document that's in the works is actually based on this taxonomy. So for in terms of, for example, experiment deployment, what are the tools provided by each of the control frameworks? In terms of experiment execution, so execution control tools, what do these different control frameworks provide? So that's the next document in the pipeline. So I think So please review the document and participate in the upcoming review. And if you cannot participate in the review, please post your comments to the working group mailing list.
Anyway. How long is the review going to be?
How long?
Yeah, a couple hours.
A couple hours at the most. Yeah. So. I'll send out an email to the working group mailing list about a week before with the call-in number and just a reminder. Sure, anything, definitely. Yeah, I was hoping especially you, Jeannie, since you've given... Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, that'll be great, okay. The mailing list? Yeah, oh yes.
Is there a mailing list for this working group?
Yes, there is a mailing list. If you go to the Gini webpage on the left, www.gini.net, on the left there's one of the links is working groups,
okay.
And then you can go there, subscribe to the working group.
Good.
That'll take you to the working group wiki. And once you have an account, once you sign up for the mailing list, you can also edit the wiki pages and contribute to the wiki.
What would experimental archival look like for something like Planet Labs version of Gini or Million Node Gini? What would archiving an experiment look like for something like Planet Labs Gini or like a Million Node Gini, where you don't have control of all the network?
So obviously we don't have all the details, but when I think of an experiment archive consisting of the experiment specification, so it's a formal specification of the experiment, the software that was installed on the various nodes. I don't know if it's required or if it's optional, but any data sets collected with appropriate metadata. Now that's the real challenge: the data and whether it's there are legal issues. There are other. Does it really make sense to store data? I don't know. That's something to be worked out. And some keywords presumably that you could search on, and at this point we're thinking that there'd be at least a checklist before you archive and experiment in Gini. These are the minimum things you need to do, and we'll see how it works. Yeah. Okay, thanks. So. Next up is Paul. Paul's going to tell us about the measurement framework for Gini that he's been working on. And then after that, we have Denise talking about data plane measurements, and then Ilya.
Can everybody see me? I just want to be sure. I'm good. We'll get it. Okay, I just have a small set of slides here to introduce those of you who haven't heard about what we're doing to what we're doing, and for those of you who do know what we're doing, to sort of bring you up to speed on our current status. So first of all, I'd like to recognize the fine team that's working on this project. Mike Blodgett, Mark Ravella, and Joel Summers are here. And then we have two students, Tristan Halverson and Charles Thomas, who are doing the hard work. All right, so our overall motivation for this project is to first recognize the fact that measurement is intrinsically important to scientific instruments, and if Gini is going to be successful in its mission to enable a broad set of experiments at scale and sort of with a diversity that hasn't been seen before, then high quality comprehensive measurement capability is required. And when we talk about measurement capability, we actually have a very broad context, including data gathering, transformation, meaning taking the raw bits that are collected and potentially transforming them into a format that makes them more amenable for analysis, providing tools and visualizations for considering the data, and then finally archiving and maintaining the data for use by other researchers or by the researchers who have actually done the experiments. So the specific objectives that we have are to identify the requirements for the measurement infrastructure for Gini, and we're thinking about this again in a broad context, and our specific focus is on what we're trying to measure and then how we're actually going to take those measurements. The next step is then to develop a set of measurement protocols and systems that support the experimental objectives that we talked about earlier in this session and that people have sort of been batting around ever since the Gini exercise started. But to this end, with respect to our own project, we're actually going to focus, or we're focused for this this first project on a subset of all possible measurements. We are not creating a set of mechanisms that will sort of enable all possible data that at least we've thought of to be collected and archived in this environment. We are, even though we're part of the Protogini cluster, we are focused on creating an architecture for measurement that will enable it to easily be transportable between control frameworks. And when I show you what our architectural design is, I think that that it'll become clear how we're going to do this. beyond the requirements document and the protocols and systems for experiments, because of the fact that there is a very practical aspect of this, namely the goal of deploying systems by the end of the grant, we need to first of all create a test harness to be able to ensure that the systems perform at a specified level. And to that end, we will take advantage of the lab facilities that we have at Wisconsin to actually benchmark and sort of satisfy ourselves that the systems are able to do what they're designed to do. And then finally, at the end of the grant, the objective is to deploy some number of systems depending on what the budget constraints are for the GPO so that they can actually be used in the experimental substrate of the infrastructure. So just to provide context, as I mentioned a minute ago, we're part of the Protogeni cluster. So I assume that there are probably no questions about this. That's where we sort of fit in with everyone else. And that leads us then to the questions that we've been considering over the last several months as part of our first objective to create this, this design document. And the first set of questions is what to measure. And to that end, I've just put together a sort of a taxonomy of the possible data that can be gathered, starting at, for me, what is sort of the highest level, which would be what I'll call application level behavior. Sort of a standard example for this would be something like the web logs. If you were going to create some kind of, you know, web 5.0 or something, and you would have the ability then to collect in that application logs from the software that would be actually running on the nodes in the infrastructure. The next layer would be, yeah, go ahead. Okay. So was this a comment on my slide or something more conceptual?
Probably something, I mean, initially started off as a comment on your slide, but I think it might be something more conceptual. Because, you know, when you start thinking about application behavior, you can sort of model an application as the transactions it executes on that infrastructure, whatever it may be. And then if you drill down from there, you'll begin to see what individual things you have to measure, and that'll give you an idea of what to measure at the node and so on.